All right, so a little bit about me and why I'm here. I'm part of the NACDD mentoring group, and I owe them a great debt of gratitude in pushing me into doing this, and my mentor, Dr. Ann Pabuski, who's here with me as well today. And I'm going to get right into it. To start off, we need to look at why I was doing this. Everyone has a different take on what their purpose was. I work on tobacco control and cancer control for my state as an evaluator. So I want to be able to inform my programs, to be able to, with our limited resources, target appropriately. And then we'd like to be able to show outcome evaluation. We're at the stage where we've gotten good at process evaluation, but that's where we're headed. And we thought Medicaid claims data would be a great way to start doing that. So our research question was to look at how well our programs are addressing tobacco disparities in our state. And our state, I feel, is a little bit unique. I've heard other presenters talk about, their urban and rural areas. We actually have frontier counties as well. So, in the bottom, we have 2 million people in Clark County, so that's Las Vegas. And then there's Carson City, the capital, and Washoe, which is where Reno is, but then in between there you have counties such as Esmeralda that have, roughly 800 people or so. And so, this puts a great strain on the system, and being able to figure out which ones you can appropriately target. And BRFSS isn't actually much help when it comes to the rurals and frontiers because your N gets smaller, so small that it's nothing significant anymore. So a little bit about our data. Or about Medicaid for our state. We expanded January 1st, 2014, and before that we had over 300,000 people enrolled. We've gotten up to 650,000. Last I checked, in May, it was at 609,000 roughly, and so we've had an 84% increase. And we were interested for initially our cancer screening programs in looking at those people that were newly eligible. That would be low income people typically, and they have higher smoking rates as well. So that kind of dovetailed nicely in what the tobacco program wants to do. We know from our Quitline data that our average caller is about 54, a woman, and a plurality of Quitline callers are on Medicaid as well. And so we ended up having 65,000 enrollees that we looked at, and that was about 10,000 claim lines that came with it on that request. And so there's CPT codes and ICD codes, which initially we turned our attention to. This was already built for our cancer programs, but for the tobacco program, I had to research that kind of by scratch. And we wanted to do descriptive statistics to start out with, just something simple. We're exploring the data. We wanted to look at it by race, ethnicity, also geographically, again, due to the uniqueness of our state. And then explore and see, who's getting cessation medications, what's actually already happening with Medicaid, and then we can look at making a difference with our program. What I ended up using is what we developed. We call it LITES, Low Income Health Tracking System, is housed on SQL Server. And the data source is operationally based, so since it's based on Medicaid claims data, the system kind of corrects itself. It's going to get audited as what the provider reports, and so it's as accurate. And the motivation is, I want that to be accurate so I can get paid if you're a provider. And the way we've set it up is we have resolution at the individual level. So, if we did something with a community health worker, we could check up and see if they had actually become a former smoker. I also used ArcGIS, which is always a lot of fun to do some geographical analysis. And here is an example, just a few codes that were of major interest. The ICD-305.1 is the main one to show tobacco use. And then there's other codes as well. In the data, not every state uses the same codes I found. So if you know one state Medicaid, you know exactly one state Medicaid program. And only 51 of the CPTs were actually in the data. Some of them don't actually pay out. And so when I ran that for the main one of interest, what I discovered, you know, roughly made sense as far as our African-American population with our latest, or, you know, with our BRFSS combining 2 years. And that's the whole population there. So there's confidence intervals. So, you know, I've grown kind of more fond of the Medicaid claims data for that reason. It still shows, you know, that our African-American population, there's a disparity there. Also, our Caucasian population, our American Indian population is a little bit more tough to ascertain because it's such a small number. There's also Indian Health Services that work with them, so our program really doesn't have as much jurisdiction with them. And then I circled this bottom one here, and the reason why that stuck out is from program records and reporting. We kind of have a feel from our partners that the Hispanic population might not truly be reporting how much they're smoking. Maybe some of that's language barrier, but we also feel maybe there's culturally a reason why they're not disclosing that. And so that's something where, since we have, you know, the names and addresses, we could do a survey and find out what the barrier is, what is really the case. Should they be getting more cessation opportunities than they are if they got coded initially correctly at first. So there might be some provider education as an example of an activity. We also looked at, former smokers to see how that showed up in the data as well, and that varied greatly. I'm going to jump into what I find the most interesting, which is I wanted to be able to highlight, you know, if we have limited funding, what counties should we maybe focus our activities on? And so, as you can see, this is really, you know, great data that our program's never really had before. And the ones that have the crosshatch on it, I actually have that data. Just we have a policy. If it's under a count of 50, I'm not able to share that. But that's of great value. If you tried to do this with BRFSS, really it would just be Washoe and Clark, and the rest of it would all be lumped together. So now we can say, hey, we only have this much money. We'll help White Pine County, Churchill, Nye, and so forth. And a little bit more on the results. What we wanted to do was to really see how tobacco cessation medication was working out. And this was actually a disappointment because in the data that we requested, there's something called NDC, National Drug Codes. And I am in a learning process. I've only been in my position for about 18 months. And I was aware of CPTs and ICD codes, but not NDC. And that column was left blank when Medicaid gave it to us, but it was requested and it was there. We met with Medicaid several weeks ago and asked them to ensure that we get it in the next data dump, which they'll be providing about in August. I was able to get aggregated data, and so we have a system where we have managed care organizations that cover our urban areas, such as Reno and Las Vegas, and we have also through fee-for-service, they cover our rural and frontier people that are enrolled in Medicaid. And really what I saw there wasn't intuitive at all because you see, such as Chantix, prescription cessation medications are paid out pretty low. So I've heard that the MCOs do a great job of managing costs and controlling costs, and apparently they might be doing too good of a job because it is covered through ACA. But you can see our rural counties and frontier counties, they're actually, you know, they're getting Chantix that's coming through to them. They're getting nicotine replacement therapy at a pretty good level as well, too. So that's kind of a new thing that we've just discovered in the last several weeks. And we'll work with our Medicaid programs to, you know, see what changes need to happen. The cost data is always a little bit interesting. That's the great thing about having Medicaid claims data. And so here's just a few examples of codes that did pay out in the data. It didn't pay out too much because we do have an issue where they only want to pay out to pregnant women. So even though they're supposed to pay out up to 4 counseling sessions, and as you can imagine with this initial population, I'm looking at women ages 40 to 64, there weren't very many cases of that. But that's what it ends up, you know, paying out on average per claim. So Chantix, which seems to be the most popular medication is quite expensive. And so for my challenges, the national drug code data is really, I think, the key in where I'm headed of what I'd like to get. And that wasn't provided by Medicaid. We have requested that, and we look forward to seeing where that leads us. Another issue that I thought about, and I was actually grateful that the data I had runs from January 1st, 2014 to September 22nd, 2015, because in October 2015 is when ICD-10 starts, and we haven't quite wrapped our heads around how we're going to lump those together, but we are going to build tables for that. So that's an upcoming step. And that's something, if you're looking at doing this, to think about as well. You know, can you stick, code 305.1 with other codes to be able to continue to use all the previous data prior to when ICD-10 is starting to be used in our state? And we've even heard, you know, even though ICD-10 was supposed to be used starting in October, there were some problems with some of our providers that are still using ICD-9. So you have to have a way for those to overlap. And then we are, you know, limited to what the provider actually reports. As I mentioned, you know, it's operationally based. So the data should be as good, as what the medical assistant believes, is what we believe. And it does correct as it gets audited. We'll get new Medicaid claims files, and we've set it up that we'll get those updates. If there's a new demographic information, we'll get those updates as well, too. And so we'll always use the latest demographics that goes along with the patient, which is quite exciting. We can keep building on that. And then so for a little bit about the discussion, I found that this is going to be a powerful tool for evaluation. We'll be able to actually show, what outcomes that we're making. This will give us a great case, for continued funding. Identifying disparities is a passion of mine. And what I think is a little bit unique about Nevada, I've heard someone can, you can feel free to talk to me about this afterwards, but we're keeping this where we can, have the resolution down to the individual level. We don't have permission to do that. And so it's sitting with our, I don't know if this is being recorded or not, but it is sitting on someone's desk right now. And so that is one of the tragedies, is being able to actually use this data to its full potential. I could do things by zip code and stuff like that, but to actually send out a survey and be like, hey, what is the barrier of preventing you from getting cessation medication? Or, this can translate to other programs such as diabetes and immunization. And that's what's really amazing about it. We're looking at first setting it up through tobacco as a pilot, and then we're going to move on to, other risk factors. And it could really be expanded even to where infectious disease could use it, and alerts could be sent out if you saw an outbreak within our Medicaid population in particular. And so, really I need to become more familiar with CPT codes, ICD-9, ICD-10 codes to really get a complete picture. And the NDC codes is really where I think we're headed for cessation. If you're going to do this, I would encourage you to find out which states or what your state pays out for. And I found that there's actually, I pretended to be a provider and went in and typed in the codes, and that way I could see which codes were paying out to give me an idea of what to pull the data for. Because it actually takes several days, to look through 10 million claim lines. And in the future, we're tailoring our data request to admin. We're going to, do from 18 to 64. And we've even talked about beyond Medicaid, there's people that have the subsidized insurance that the state and the government is helping to pay for. And so why not include that farther along the way? I do want to give thanks to a lot of help. This isn't just me. So, I'm up here and I have to answer the questions. Hopefully I can, if there are any. But it was through a mentoring program that I was able to learn about this. And so these are just some of the names that helped me. And, I'm happy to go over any questions at this point. Thank you.
I experienced looking at the rate ethnicity information in the Medicaid plan that is not really accurate or complete. So what's the experience of the accuracy of the rate ethnicity information in the Medicaid plan?
We do have it, I guess, lumped together in some ways where, you know, we're adding together all I guess other races if they're a small number, and then we do end up using, you know, what is the latest one state, but we can manually go in and compare. Our Medicaid data was fairly consistent as far as like race and ethnicity. There were, you know, people that claimed multiple races, and that there was actually a code for that in the way that we were able to look at that. And so that's where it seems to change. We actually have more of an issue of people moving in and out of the state. And so that was, you know, for the extreme example, if we had someone had 8 different addresses, they were moving back and forth between Colorado and Reno. And then we assigned them kind of like our own primary key unique number. So we realized like social security numbers, date of birth, things like that might change, or there might be inaccuracies, but the race data, unless if they chose multiple race, was usually fairly consistent, especially the ethnicity, whether they're Hispanic or not Hispanic. That one was consistent across the board for our state.
Hi,
Alex.
Also,
yeah.
So great. I have a question. I
didn't
hypothesize that the Hispanic.
You speak in the microphone.
Oh. In that one slide where you had Hispanics circled with the births being much higher than the Medicaid, did you also have a hypothesis for why you see the same trend with the Black population?
So why that one's much lower? So
yeah.
The problem is with BRFSS, which I don't want to get, I guess, in a fight about it, is that our confidence intervals get pretty big. And so I actually have men and women grouped together. We do know, like, if we just look at female, so I would expect it to be somewhat lower. It's just, so in this case, that column with BRFSS is both men and women. And so that, to me, that does make sense. It's just, I know the confidence interval for Hispanic women, it's actually like 11 to something percent. And so it's still statistically significant, it is even lower than 11%, which is why it stuck out. And I am going by, I guess, my hypothesis, the part of why I think they're not reporting, that comes from, you know, relying on program records and quarterly reports that come up from the subgrantee, but we haven't been able to do any surveys to verify that yet.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.